Our next speaker is Shayna Meyer. She is our occupational therapist here, and she's going to give a talk on the role of occupational therapy, physical therapy, and speech therapy for neurodegenerative disorders. Shayna received her bachelor's degree in psychology with an emphasis in biology from Westminster College in Missouri, and a master's in occupational therapy from St. Louis University. While at the Louisville Center for Brain Health, Shayna has become a Parkinson's Wellness Recovery certified therapist, a multiple sclerosis certified therapist, and a certified dementia practitioner, and has spoken at the Neurotherapeutics for Rehabilitation courses. So now let me introduce Ms. Shayna Meyer.
Thank you for that introduction, Leanne. Today, I'm here to talk about the role of physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech-language pathology in neurodegenerative disorders. I am an occupational therapist by background, so I will be starting there today. Occupational therapists help individuals be as independent as possible with the things that they need to do, like everyday activities of daily living, and want to do, like hobbies or leisure. They did just update our domain and process in our practice framework, so I have that on the left here. And they did add health management as an occupation in the new practice framework. You can see here the different areas that occupational therapists address in this chart on the right. We address occupations such as activities of daily living, which is what people typically think of when it comes to occupational therapy. But we also include instrumental activities of daily living, health management, rest and sleep, education, work, play, leisure, and social participation as part of other occupations. We also address the context, the performance patterns and skills, and client factors that impact how somebody is doing with their occupations. So when would someone refer to occupational therapy in neurodegenerative conditions like Parkinson's or multiple sclerosis or dementia? It all comes back to concerns with those occupations that we just discussed and concerns with daily life activities. As we know, in neurodegenerative conditions, people will progressively decline over time if not addressed. So anytime that a motor skill impairment, which is how people obtain and hold objects, or a process skill change occurs, then that's how people organize their space in relation to objects. Or if there's a change in social interaction and relationships, especially with communicating with loved ones, and or a change in mental or sensory functions, then that would be a great time to refer to occupational therapy. As with all of the therapies we're discussing today, you always want to refer often and early. Early is better. We can help people more whenever symptoms are just starting to arise, as opposed to when somebody's gotten so progressively impacted by their symptoms that they can't do their basic activities of daily living on their own. So I wanted to put this in as well. I think that these are great examples throughout each of the disciplines to think about as a practitioner in any respect and when you might refer to a specific discipline. So when it comes to occupational therapy, if I were a physical therapist or a nurse practitioner or a physician or a social worker or a speech therapist, if I heard some of these triggers, I might say, have you ever heard of occupational therapy? So I think of things like, I need help with, or I can't do anymore, or I stopped doing. We hear that a lot. Well, I stopped doing my gardening because it didn't feel safe and I thought that I might fall in my yard. Always tired, or it takes too much time or effort. This one is particularly relevant to Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis, where fatigue is a big issue. Sometimes it's not that somebody can't bathe themselves, but that they're so tired after bathing that they avoid it. Always dropping things, or can't manipulate things, like I can't open jars, or I'm always dropping plates or cups, or I can't hold on to my coffee cup anymore. Just watching TV is a great trigger example. What are you doing the day? Well, I just watch TV. That's all. That might be an indication that they need some more occupations to keep them physically and mentally active so that their disease doesn't take control of their life. I don't feel safe, or I'm afraid of falling. Those are other indications that they might be having some environmental safety issues that need to be addressed by an occupational therapist. And the I keep forgetting to do, or I messed up. And sometimes, you know, we just make a mistake with maybe I forgot to take a medication on time, or I forgot to pay that bill on time. But looking for patterns in those kinds of activities is a great way to get early identification for therapy. Let's look a little bit at physical therapy next. So physical therapy, their goal is to optimize functional and community movement to improve the human experience. And they have this on their APTA website, the Choose More Movement, Choose Better Health, Choose Physical Therapy. So as you can see, there's already a trend around therapies changing a lot of their missions and values and performance to include health in all of their initiatives, because health is such a big area, especially in neurodegenerative conditions. So when would one refer to physical therapy? Physical comorbidities that impact their health and participation. So a lot of comorbidities contribute to further progression of a Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, or any type of dementia. So that would be a great early referral to physical therapy, especially if they have cardiovascular changes and problems. A fear or risk of falling, especially if that's leading to activity avoidance, gait and balance changes, particularly watching for people who are shuffling or dragging their feet or stumbling over thresholds or having trouble stepping up on and off curbs or stairs, because that could indicate visual spatial impairments, changes in functional strength and gross motor or fine motor, postural instability in sitting or standing, dizziness or other sensory disruptions, and pain. So here are some PT trigger examples that you might hear somebody say that has a neurodegenerative condition that you may want to get an early referral going for physical therapy. Any examples of them indicating that they are very sedentary or avoiding activities that they once participated in or found important. Comments like, I'm unsteady when it is hard for me to, or having difficulty. So I'm having difficulty getting in and out of my car, or I'm having difficulty, or it's hard for me to get to doctor's appointments because it's hard to walk through the parking lot. Another common one we see often is my legs feel. So if someone says my legs feel really heavy, my legs feel funny, my legs feel wobbly, those are indications for physical therapy. Holding onto stuff when walking. A common one is furniture walking. So I hold onto chairs when I get to the bathroom, especially if they're not using any previously prescribed adaptive equipment correctly, like a walker or a cane or even a wheelchair. If when they're coming in or out of your visit and you notice that the caregiver or the patient isn't locking or unlocking the wheelchair to stand up or sit down, and they have those safety behaviors, that itself is a great referral reason. It is easier to just stay in my chair or bed. That's a big one. A lot of people just say, well, it's easier if I do it this way. But that's not what's best for the patient. I don't get out much, or I do less of. Those are also commonly used, especially during the summer months when it's really hot and people have a lot more fatigue than normal. My partner helps me do blank. So any of those would be really great things to listen to that might be a great trigger for physical therapy in neurodegenerative conditions. And speech-language pathology. So speech-language pathologists, or I'll call them speech therapists going forward, they prevent, assess, diagnose, and treat all of the following: speech, language, social communication, cognitive communication, and swallowing disorders. So when to refer to speech for people who are living with these neurodegenerative changes. If someone is struggling to say something or struggling to find the right words, or they're repeating words or parts of words, or they're speaking in short fragmented phrases or saying the words in the wrong order, struggling with using words and understanding what others are saying to them, they might have difficulty imitating speech sounds back to someone. They may be making inconsistent errors. There's also a lot of disruption to just speech in general. So a slowed rate of speech, slurred speech, slower or more rapid rate of speech than normal, We also see a lot of hypophonia or quieter voice, swallow dysfunction, and cognitive changes. So what would be some triggers to look for that might indicate a good speech therapy referral? Coughing or choking when they're eating or drinking, especially even when taking pills. Trouble finding the right words. We hear this one a lot. I just can't find the right words. I can't remember this person's name. I don't like having conversations with friends or family anymore because I get fumbled over my words and I don't know what to say, and that's embarrassing. Always forgetting things, especially I think some of the most common ones we hear are, I walked into the other room and then I forgot what I was going there for. Or my spouse says that I always repeat the same questions and they get really annoyed with me. Voice quality changes, weight loss and or dehydration, because those can be a cause of not swallowing properly or decreased nutritional intake because of swallow dysfunction. And having trouble understanding or reading or talking. So what does therapy look like in general? So I tried to generalize physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy to what does a typical evaluation look like across all disciplines. But then, of course, given that we're going to specifically address our individual areas, we always start with an interview. We want to talk with the patient, and we want to talk with any caregivers. Caregivers might include a spouse, it might include children, or it might include paid help like a PCA. We review the history, so we review the medical chart. We look at what are the past medical notes, what are the comorbidities and secondary conditions that the person is living with, what medications are they taking, all of that relevant information that we need to know so that we can put their whole plan of care together. We also do a physical, cognitive, and psychosocial, either screen or assessment, and that's very dependent upon the person sitting in front of us. So we might change our approach to lean one way or another depending on what we're hearing from them subjectively or what we know about their medical chart and history. Oftentimes, we're also looking when we're doing the medical chart review to see what has previously been done so that we're not duplicating efforts. So if a cognitive screen was just done in the last few months and nothing has significantly changed for the patient, we might move on from that and ask different questions about cognition instead of doing another cognitive screen. We then analyze performance, and this is where our specific disciplines really shine. So depending on if we're an occupational therapist, in which I might analyze how they handwrite a note or sign a medical document, or I might analyze how they tie their shoes or take their shoes on and off, or I might analyze how they get in and out of the car. Cognitively, one of my favorite analyses is that I like to see how they do their medication management. So I usually have them bring in all of their equipment and they have to show me what are they taking, do they understand the prescription label, do they know how to put it in their prescription planner fine, are they even using a prescription planner? And then we develop goals. So no matter, we develop specific speech or physical or occupational therapy goals specific to the patient's needs and wants and the family's needs and wants, and then what we're seeing as well, what we know might be declining and that we need to address so that it doesn't become a bigger issue. And then the final thing then we kind of do is we pull that all together to develop the frequency and the plan of care using relevant outcome measures. Something that I want to point out about neurodegenerative conditions is that because they're not going to go away and they're chronic in nature and progressive in nature, is that the plan of care is very important to consider what is best for that person sitting in front of you. So one thing that we are very commonly doing at LuRuvo is that we spread visits out, especially if somebody's been seeing us for years and they kind of already know what we do and what they should be doing. We see them maybe once a month, maybe every 3 months, maybe every 6 months, so that we can look, try to analyze what's changing, and then try to update their plan of care, their home exercise program, or their home safety modifications at real time before it's a bigger issue and address that head on. We also want to not see them so frequently that they become dependent upon us. We want them to independently be able to manage their conditions with us as their support system and us to be coaching them along the journey. So oftentimes we might see somebody who is newer or going through an acute exacerbation of some sort once or twice a week for a month or two. But then we immediately try to start taking them away from that frequent plan of care and spacing those visits out further so that they can start to be more independent. We are huge advocates for community programming. All of the people that we work with need to be in some type of community exercise program or doing something at home, because this therapy only is not sustainable. They need to be exercising and eating better and reducing their stress and socializing in positive ways all of the time. So what are some typical interventions? I'm not going to get too specific for time's sake today, but I want to kind of point out what we share in common here when we're doing interventions with patients. So it's always dependent on the patient's specific goals. So there's no one intervention that we do with everybody. It really depends on what we're finding that might impact their safety or their performance or their quality of life. So these are the common things that we do. We do a ton of caregiver training. A lot of caregiver training, because as you know, the person is going to need support at some level at some point. So it's very important that they have a support system and that we use and train that support system. We do adaptive equipment training. So that could be anything from what kind of a commode to get for the bathroom, or what kind of rails, or should the person be using a U-step walker or a cane or walking poles? Should the person use a power wheelchair, or do they ambulate in the community with a scooter? Do they need more durable medical equipment evaluations? So what do they need? We use compensatory strategies depending on the person. That might be a cognitive compensatory strategy, such as how do they manage their time? Are they using a planner or a calendar? Are they using it in the right way? Are they overusing it? Post-its are a common thing that get overused, and that's not always a positive compensatory strategy for some people. We do a lot of home safety and environment recommendations. So based on what cognitive changes we're seeing, what balance changes we're seeing, what we know about the person's home setup, we are always making home safety and environmental recommendations to make their fall risk lower or reduce the risk of them getting into an incident because maybe they didn't turn off their stove or shut their garage door or lock their door at night. We do a lot of teaching. We create a individualized home exercise program, and then it's teaching and coaching and making sure that they fully understand what it is that they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to be doing it, and do they know how to grade it up or down? And can they be independent with that at home? And there's so many facets that go into this. We need to make sure that the handouts that we're giving the person are clear and concise and make sense. We need to make sure that they have a plan and not 50 different home exercise program flyers. So it needs to be very clear. And then finally, as you've seen already, education, education, education. It's huge. We use a lot of teach back. Tell me how this last week went. What went well for you? What could you have done better at? Did you stick to your short-term goals we wrote down last week very clearly? And if not, what do we need to change going forward? What are the barriers that you have so we can push through those together? So now I just want to go into a little bit of the evidence-based articles for each discipline. And I did put all of them in the references so that you can look into them more thoroughly if you want. And there's a lot more out there, but obviously I couldn't fit all of them today. So I just put some of the ones that we've really been paying attention to recently. So in occupational therapy, one of my favorite phrases from an article that I recently read is engagement in meaningful activity is the art and science of occupational therapy, and it will never be superseded by technological innovation because true creativity and genuine empathy cannot be mechanized. So I think that that really speaks to what occupational therapy is. We are these task analysis experts. We're going in there. We're making sure that we know what's impacting our patients and their families, and we're being really creative, and we're empathizing with them to help them through their barriers. The evidence also supports promotion of social physical activity, health behavior change techniques, and task-specific training for problematic instrumental activities of daily living in Parkinson's. So there's a lot of support there. A lot of the patients we work with Parkinson's were addressing those instrumental activities, such as cooking and cleaning and managing medication and managing bills and driving. Occupational therapists are also uniquely qualified to assess the cognitive function of persons with dementia, caregivers, and their home environments, and then we integrate that information so we can derive and implement activities that are very tailored to that person's capacities and their contexts. And this reduces neuropsychiatric behaviors that we often see. So people who are more engaged in meaningful activity have less neuropsychiatric behaviors. And here's that education again. So caregiver education and training is supported for all neurodegenerative disorders in the OT literature. OT is also well positioned to contribute to enhancing the quality of life of people, especially those transitioning from paid work to retirement. And then finally, OTs can identify the limitations of participation and autonomy in people living with multiple sclerosis to implement those occupation-based and client-centered interventions. So we assess the environmental factors and we make actionable items to decrease their environmental barriers. And that can be done through either environmental modification or caregiver education, depending on the person. Evidence-based physical therapy, ongoing vigorous exercise, and physical fitness should be highly encouraged for all neurodegenerative diseases. And this is where that unique role of physical therapy can come into play. The more that physical therapists highlight this and make this doable for people, the more they're going to do this and be successful with this in the community. PT programs for Parkinson's should include structured, graduated fitness instruction and guidance, especially for those deconditioned patients who haven't had therapy in the past or who are returning after long periods. This is one that we really use here at LuRuvo, this third one bullet point down. No balance assessment in its own possesses acceptable... Oops, we're scooting ahead. Sorry. So no balance assessment at this time is predictive enough in determining who's at risk for falls within the next year. So this is suggesting the need for regular balance evaluations every 6 months for people who are living with Parkinson's disease. So how we interpret this is that people who have a diagnosis of Parkinson's should be getting a physical therapy checkup every 6 months, because they may not identify the balance changes that are occurring on their own, and or it may go too long before that's addressed by somebody. Aside from a brain neuroprotective effect, physical exercise also attenuates cognitive decline by mitigating the cerebrovascular risk, as I mentioned earlier, is a big comorbidity factor in decline for our patients. So this is really important, especially in people who are living with any type of dementia. People living with multiple sclerosis should be performing more than 150 minutes a week of exercise as per healthy adults from the CDC recommendations, and they should be getting more than 150 minutes per week of lifestyle type physical activity. As we know, fatigue and muscle weakness and spasticity and pain are all part of living with multiple sclerosis for many of our patients. So we need to support them in being able to reach this 300 minutes a week of active time in an adaptive way that's not overdoing it. So that's where the personalized care plays a role. And finally, just 1 month of physical therapy is associated with decreases in gait, balance, and cognitive impairment in individuals who are living with Alzheimer's disease and any other type of cognitive change or dementia. And then finally, with speech. So speech therapists should consider acting as coaches to support positive communication for people with dementia. The article that this was stated in was particularly geared at CNAs. And this helps to decrease negative responsive behaviors in dementia. We also, cognitive interventions in speech therapy may include errorless learning, spaced retrieval training, vanishing cues, or verbal instruction or cueing, and this helps to improve the cognitive communication functioning of patients in dementia. visual aids, improved decision-making capacity of individuals living with dementia, and additionally, it actually improved the potential for judges who are familiar with speech-language pathology to reach a stronger consensus when determining decision-making capacity for people living with dementia. And discrepancies between speech-language pathologists' beliefs and the literature and self-reported practices for feeding tube placements in patients with advanced dementia suggests the need to connect the evidence base to clinical practice, so thus saying that the speech-language pathologist's role is essential when talking about end-of-life care protocols. And then finally, this is something we'll be implementing here soon, and there are other communities in the other classes in the communities as well. The Speak Out and the Loud Crowd programs are very successful programs in helping people who've already been through speech language pathology who are living with Parkinson's disease be able to compensate for the loss of the automatic vocal control that they have through goal-directed basal ganglia cortical circuits. So very exciting stuff, and there's so much more literature out there, so get out there and do your research. And I did list all the references after this slide, but for now, I just want to take any questions.
Well, thank you, Shana, for that great presentation. We have a few questions for you. So the first question is, how do I choose, or do I have to choose, physical therapy or occupational therapy for someone whose inactivity is my primary concern? It seems that you said I could send to either or both.
Thank you for that question, and thanks for having me today. I hope that you all took something away from that. I would not say that you have to choose, certainly. If somebody's inactive, I would actually personally recommend a physical therapy and an occupational therapy evaluation, because the whole purpose of an evaluation is for the therapist to determine what that person needs. And so the occupational therapist or the physical therapist might decide to take on a larger role than the other field, or they may equally work together to address the issue of inactivity. So I highly recommend getting both fields involved if you can.
Okay, great. Another question is, are there still Medicare limitations on the amount of therapy allowed each year? If so, what are they?
That's another great question. So I know there have been a lot of changes over the last few years, particularly because of the pandemic with reimbursement. But in 2018, the Bipartisan Budget Act repealed the cap for CMS or Medicare services for outpatient therapy. However, that does not just mean unlimited services. Therapy is still very much viewed a skilled service. And so if we go over $2,110 per year, with PT and speech actually being combined into that same budget, and then OT being in its own separate budget, but that's another discussion for another day, then we have to apply what is called a KX modifier. And a KX modifier attests that we are rendering that person medically necessary, very skilled services. So as you can see, it gets very tricky. We have to be very mindful of when we're working with people, if it is skilled indeed, or if it is just routine follow through. As therapists in this population, we have to be very careful about how much repetition we're doing with people. Is there a particular reason why? We need to make sure that we're doing caregiver training to follow through with that home exercise program or the recommendations we're making, because that's not skilled to just keep repeating that every session. The skilled part of being a therapist is to adapt the plan of care as we need to. And so how we operate is a little bit different, and I'm going to discuss that during one of the other questions. Additionally, if we go over $3,000 in a given calendar year, this retains the right to go to medical review process. So then CMS can take a look at our notes to determine if it was medically necessary or not, and they can red flag and they can take back reimbursement.
Good. Okay, what is the typical course of OT or PT? For example, what's the duration? How many sessions per week, etc.?
So this is where I want to go into a little bit more about the model we do, because we work with solely neuroprogressive populations, we have a very different model and duration and frequency than most other populations. So we look at it this way. If somebody comes to us and they've had an acute change or a new symptom that came on or an additional comorbidity that might be impacting their function, we may see them once or twice a week for a short amount of time, maybe a month or two, because that's when we're really investigating, evaluating, and making a new plan for them, depending on the changes that we're seeing. But as soon as we're able to, through caregiver training, making sure the patient understands exactly what we want, making it very clear what we need from them when they're at home and not in our session, we start to taper them down every other week or once a month, or sometimes every 3 months. And that's how we view maintenance. We want to check in and make sure that they're not having changes that affect their function that they might not be noticing, but we do not need to see them once or twice a week all of the time. That actually can sometimes hinder a patient's progress because they become dependent upon that therapy relationship and they don't work on those things you've asked them to at home because they know they're coming back to see you in a few days. So it's very variable. And then when we work with people with milder deficits or early onset, of which we really encourage people coming in during early onset diagnoses, we might see them every 6 months or every 1 year. And that's solely just kind of like a checkup where we run through some different balance assessments in PT, some different fine motor dysfunction or cognitive assessments in speech and OT, just to identify changes they may not have noticed that we need to address before they impact their function.
Okay, thank you. How do I find OTs and PTs? Are they usually in the same locations or practices with the physical therapist?
That's going to be really tricky depending on where you're located. I know that we have a very large, diverse group joining us today from all over the world. Locally in Nevada, it's going to be very dependent upon the person's benefits because there are only certain clinics that work with certain insurance contracts. So usually an administrative assistant or whatever you consider that role to be in your office or where you work can identify clinics for you and find those clinics by looking at their insurance benefits. Patients, if they have a very specific one, they can call their insurance and see where they can get in. But most outpatient and inpatient clinics have occupational therapy involved. Speech therapy is usually in their own separate clinics and can be a little bit trickier to find. You can also go online and either Google or, you know, search that way. Mm-hmm. But building those relationships in your community is what I really recommend. Making sure you know who is working in your community and who you work the best with as a provider.
Okay, next question. How does one address an older, say, 80-year-old Parkinson's patient who gets fatigued with modest activity and has no cardiac or pulmonary disease? And he also says this patient has good sleep hygiene.
Great question. Fatigue is a very, very common symptom of people living with Parkinson's disease. So I would recommend a therapy, physical therapy, and occupational therapy evaluation, making sure that it's very clear that that person is really living with fatigue, because there may be a lot of confounding variables to why that person has that fatigue. One of the most common that I would say, if the person has good sleep hygiene, is that they're actually not active enough, or they may be too active in the wrong ways. So on the one end, if somebody is sedentary and not moving about and not exercising or not doing things around the house, they are going to have more fatigue because it's a very vicious cycle and they're stuck in that sedentary cycle. On the other hand, if they are very active, since fatigue is something that comes with Parkinson's, they might be doing too much at one time or too much on too many days. So then we would take a look at a micro level and macro level calendar for them and see throughout the day, throughout the week, and throughout the month, how are they putting their activities and where are they putting that time?
Okay, we have time for one more question, Shana. Do OTs And PTs perform physical inspections or evaluations of the patient's home and make recommendations based upon that.
Yeah, so that's another excellent question. As in this population, home safety is huge. So OTs and PTs cannot always physically be present in the home because it depends on what setting you're working with. If the PT/OT is in a home health perspective or setting, they can certainly go into the home and do a home safety evaluation. If it's outpatient that you're working with, fortunately, through 2021, for most insurances, therapy for the first time ever was actually able to be reimbursed and billed for virtual visits. So something that we've been taking advantage of when we know that we really need a home safety evaluation as we do a virtual in with them and we have them walk us through their home and we look at different rooms together and make recommendations for safety that way.
Okay, great. Thank you, Shayna. This was a very enlightening presentation, and I'm sure the practitioners here really appreciate that those options that you provided for their patients. There are other questions in there that perhaps we could answer in the chat line, and but right now we are a little overdue for our break, and so I'm going to request that you maybe go see our exhibitors, go take a stretch, get some water. And we'll see you back at about 11:07 Pacific time, which is 2:07 Eastern time. Thank you so much. Thanks, Shayna.